I think we all know people who have physical allergies. One individual cannot eat strawberries, but the most inconvenient allergy that I know recorded was when a wife became allergic to her husband. No emotional factors involved, completely chemical. So you never know where an allergy is going to show up. In fact, we all have some of them. Today, the greatest attention is being given to food allergies. And already more than 250 types of allergy have been found and assigned to their proper causes. Of course, our ancestors knew nothing about this, which probably was a great help, because they lived simply, ate normal food that had been honestly prepared, and went along with only an occasional outburst in which a particular product was especially offensive. But while we have been going along thinking a lot about food allergies and pollen allergies and climatic difficulties, we have forgotten that there are also allergies that affect the mental and emotional lives of people. You can have a mental allergy just as easily as you can have a physical one. In fact, a great deal of unhappiness is the result of the unsuspected fact that the psychic integration of the individual is very sensitive, easily disturbed, and very often annoyed. Under these conditions, it's interesting and perhaps profitable to study a little bit to see if we can trace the processes within ourselves which might result in or has resulted in an allergic reaction to circumstances. The first thing we have to do is to sit down rather quietly and try to decide what most frequently upsets us. An upset psyche is very much like an upset stomach. It can be very annoying, and if not corrected, will continue to develop until it can become such a firm part of the personality that we have to live with it the rest of our lives. So we can try, if possible, to determine matters that are particularly difficult for us to face and yet are not especially serious in themselves. One of the more common problems we have today is our allergic reaction to world conditions. There's hardly anyone who hasn't found contemporary circumstances indigestible. We are concerned over the problems of nations, and we take upon ourselves, very personally, situations we can do nothing about. One of the problems, of course, is to trace our allergic reaction to world affairs to see if we can decide which particular part of our own nature is most likely to become involved. Our allergies are not consistent any more than the food allergies are. They do not follow well-regulated patterns. They nearly always arise where there is a powerful element in the personality itself. In food allergies, the system tells us what we can eat. And in emotional and mental allergies, the mind or the emotions decide what we will accept or reject. And where rejection comes in, there's always discomfort of some kind. So we must try to discover, if possible, how to cope with certain difficulties of temperament. The easiest way to approach this, of course, is to watch yourself for a few days and note down things that especially annoy you, situations that you say, I just can't stand. Or if you have people you know that you hope will never visit you again, why? What have they done to become a nuisance to your psyche? How have they offended your psychic digestive system so that you find it convenient to ignore them? Now, in the physical phase of matters, we are warned against junk foods. But in matters of psychic allergy, we have to go much further than this. Even physical allergy can go into climate. It can cause individuals to be uncomfortable and sick simply by being in an atmosphere that displeases them. Hot and cold can prove allergic to people. Some like hot weather, some like cold weather. Some prefer the mountains and others the desert. What these preferences are may be difficult to examine, but we must try to do what we can. If in your daily living there is nothing that upsets you, that you can just take everything as it comes in good grace and good spirit, avoiding no responsibility that is yours and taking on none for other people, you may say that you are comparatively healthy psychologically, that you have every reason to be grateful that you have been given a mind and an emotional nature which is minding its own business and is concerned with the principal and regular problems of living. If, however, you find that it's very easy to upset you, then remember that it is very easy to upset the stomach with the wrong food. Also, if you find out that the things that upset you, like junk foods in the stomach, are not really very important. They are trivia, and most people react more violently to trivial things than they do to major events. Very often we can meet almost any emergency with grace, but small irritations, like allergies, are constant discomforts and annoyances. Why do we have certain feelings about things? Why do we have prejudices? Why is it that situations arise that we can't endure? Why was it that every time President Ulysses S. Grant listened to music, it made him sick? He was allergic to music. He was even more allergic when in the White House they wanted him to dance to it. That was nearly the finish of the poor man. So, almost anything can cause a psychic allergy. Wallpaper, furnishings, conversation, the tones of persons' voices, weather, all these things have a tendency to get at us and to do things to us that are not particularly fortunate. Now, it is obvious that in many instances we cannot change circumstances. We cannot avoid completely everything that seems disagreeable to us. We must therefore go after those things which can be corrected and do all that is possible to improve the situation. We are also often unaware of a psychic allergy. We do not realize that we have it. We live with it sometimes a lifetime without finding out what it is. This can happen with food also, or pollen allergy. It can come from perfumes. Some people are allergic to tobacco smoke. Others are allergic to an electric iron because of the steam that comes out of it. It is almost impossible to determine all these physical factors. And it is also very difficult to work with all of the psychological factors. Many persons simply settle down and endure them the best they can for their lifetimes. But it's not necessary to be so completely patient or to just go on doing something that could be changed for the better. So we'll assume for the moment that you are going to try to find out what irritates you. And as you go along, you must try to decide to what degree these irritations are genuine and to what degree they are imaginary in your own life. I know people who are terribly annoyed by telephone ringing. Even though they want to receive the messages, they always seem to come at the wrong moment when the individual is not ready to talk or doesn't feel like going to the phone. Others do not like doorbells. Many are allergic to the arrangements of groceries in a market. If the groceries were on shelf 5 for a while and suddenly disappear and appear on shelf 12, there is a minor catastrophe in the human emotional structure. We are nearly all today allergic to prices. Nearly to mention them very often will cause a major disturbance of the psychic integration. Now, as we go along with some of these matters, it becomes obvious that what cannot be cured must be endured. And the proper attitude of acceptances can do a great deal to benefit the situation. Now, in food allergies, acceptances may be in the form of stomatic medications. An individual who has certain difficulties can take certain remedies for these difficulties and enjoy greater comfort. The same is true in psychological allergies. The individual can rearrange his affairs so that he can endure his dislikes with greater grace. Now, if you have a tendency to worry about this, sit down and estimate in your own mind the value of an antagonism or an antipathy. Try to find out what it costs to take an attitude that is essentially unhealthy. What do you gain? With a food allergy, you may enjoy a dessert and be prepared to stand the results. But with a psychic allergy, there's very often no dessert to enjoy first. There is simply a difficulty that has no rewarding factors unless the mind itself changes. This is probably where natural law steps in. We are supposed to control and discipline our natures. And if we do not do these things correctly, then the body or the mind or the emotions will be disoriented. The person will suffer because he has failed to keep the rules governing the circumstances which annoy him. He suffers because he cannot have his own way in a universe in which finally his only out, his only security, lies in following the way of heaven. We cannot stand against inevitables. We shouldn't even try. When an inevitable comes along, we must try to learn its lesson. We must escape from its penalties by transmuting our own relation to the incidents. If the things cannot be changed, we have two choices. One is to depart from the situation as gracefully as possible and just give up trying. The other answer is to take the situation and ask ourselves very simply, what does it mean to me and how can it help me to grow? How can I learn to grow above an allergy? How can I finally come into a peaceful relationship with that which I have normally disliked? Now, if the thing you dislike is bad, you're not supposed to come into a peaceful relationship with it. You're supposed to simply leave it alone. But if it is good but difficult, or has possibilities of being important education-wise, then the problem is to work it out through an understanding of life. This is where philosophy comes along. Philosophy is a kind of a metaphysical system of dietetics. It has a method of providing nutrition to the inner life of the individual. Now, we will find that there is no complete conformity as to what nutrition anybody needs. But there is our general rule, proving conclusively that the test of nutrition is its result. If the nutrition physically helps the situation, it is right. If it makes further difficulty, it is not right. If an effort to solve a condition in life improves that condition, then we're on the right track. If it does not improve the condition or makes it worse, then our remedy is not effective. We are not doing the thing correctly, or we are not following the way of heaven as far as that incident is concerned. Actually, philosophy cuts through most of all human relationships and attitudes. It gives us a commanding relationship with life. It helps us to do those things which are proper and necessary, provides us with a proper explanation of why we should keep the rules, and also provides us a series of rather firm rules through the application of which we can correct most of the defects of living. Now, one problem, for instance, that we have in psychic life is a natural tendency within ourselves to be terribly egocentric. Every person practically thinks in terms of self. In some mysterious way, as a personality, we are mixed up in our own conduct, too intimately and often too irrationally. We do want so desperately to do what we want to do that we regard all interference as objectionable. Anything that interferes with the fulfillment of our own desire becomes an adversary. And if it is a person, that person becomes an enemy, or at least we have no longer any interest in them. We do not have much interest in anything that is different or differs intellectually or morally from our own personal code. Now, this presents itself as a real challenge, because for the most part, we are all better off when we have some contact with things about which we do not agree. It is very important to have an occasional disagreement. But this disagreement should be intelligent. It should mean that we will consider the other person's point of view. And this is the most difficult thing of all. And one prominent businessman is said to have spoken about this subject in a club talk. He said, we have to get along with those stupid people who do not agree with us. Now, if we can't get along, then we are allergic to the stupid people who do not agree with us. Now, the question arises whether this is an unmitigated disaster or whether there's something in it that is very useful. One of the ways we all have to grow is by contact with the unfamiliar. We go along doing the same things until they become very comfortable. But the life has a tendency to stagnate. We have a tendency to drift through to the end of our years without adding very much to the dimensions of our consciousness. If, however, we are challenged, the challenge is like waking an individual who is sleeping comfortably. But it is not possible to grow as well asleep as it is awake. So the individual who becomes aware of circumstances he had never understood before has an opportunity to grow. Now, these circumstances, whatever they may be, have a tendency to be in conflict with the comfortable consequences of comparative mental indolence. If the person has been getting along the way he wanted to, if his friends tolerate him, if he has his own way, and if in an argument it becomes easier to keep quiet than argue with him, this person has a tendency to feel that life is just about what it ought to be. But he will live this way and probably ultimately depart this way, and is very doubtful if he goes to a better world whether he'll be any happier there than he is here, because he's going to find fault with something. But if this same individual realizes that these differences of opinions, which act as irritations, are much like what the Greeks called the gadfly of Zeus. The great deity Zeus had a fly that was always stinging people and made them uncomfortable. They were always swatting at it, but it got away. And this gadfly is more or less a personification of the irritations which arise within us. This gadfly is the constant contact with people who will not do exactly what we want them to do, who do not agree that we have infallible attitudes, or that we know exactly the right color for the wallpaper. These people do not agree, and they would not agree with us, and we would not agree with them. So the problem arises of living in a constant relationship with people that is damaged by this determined effort of each person to convert somebody else. If this problem has arisen in your life, and if you find that you gradually lose friendships or lose opportunities or even lose employment because of attitudes, then you have a psychological allergy that is very well worth working on and trying to overcome. Actually, we have to go back to philosophic principles in order to fully understand the life we live. Among these principles, perhaps the most important one to remember, is that we are here to grow. We are not here to rusticate. We are not here like bulbs in the ground, simply to wait till the sun causes us to sprout. We are here to grow by intent and purpose. We come into this world with a certain endowment. This endowment is very much like the biblical statement of the talents. And these are talents in one sense of the word, not coins, but specialized abilities. We come into this world with potential for growth. And a successful life is the one in which this potential is made real in action. The individual who is able to live throughout his lifetime without changing his mind on any subject is the most dismal failure of all. Because no one at the present time is wise enough to be able to go through life without improving and at the same time fulfill the destiny for which he was intended. So we have to begin by assuming that we are going to live in a world which is not going to agree with us in everything, a world in which other people will try to do to us what we are desperately trying to do to them. When we do it is an act of wisdom. When they do it is a very unpleasant occurrence. One more problem that we have to take from natural law is that nature reserves health, happiness, peace of mind, security for individuals who make corrections in their own dispositions. No one can be happy as long as the ability and capacity for unhappiness is strong within him. A person who is unhappy will not become any happier unless he changes himself. The idea of depending on other people is a mistake. In modern life, we are making a grand mistake. We are assuming that happiness is something that we can buy. We are assuming that happiness is prosperity in economic matters. We are assuming that we can achieve internal security, peace of mind, and peace of heart by increasing our worldly possessions. As means of improving our characters, wealth of all kinds, possessions, things, luxuries, must be considered junk foods. They are not sources of any strength. They are sources of gratification of all kinds of uncorrected attitudes within ourselves. We are not here to hope that the gratification of the accumulative instinct is going to solve any problems that we possess. If we have no problems and are getting along fine with everything we have, it's not going to be very easy to change. But nature, fortunately, does not allow any life to run its entire length without challenge. There has to be a certain amount of growth. And if nature finds it's impossible to achieve growth in an individual, then a kind of auricular sclerosis, takes in. We have no further growth. We have no further advancement, and we begin to decline, dry up, and finally blow away. There has to be growth. And the growth is interfered with by the individual who locks himself against it. A form of allergy psychologically is therefore self-centeredness, selfishness, and the will to do what one pleases at all cost and regardless of consequences. This kind of life is bound to come to trouble. Another type that is in difficulties most of the time is the person who lacks the willpower or courage to make any major decisions. They depend upon others to do their thinking for them. In this way, they allow other people to be the source of the psychic allergies from which most of us suffer to some degree. The person who tries to get away from the responsibility of decision is building trouble because he is now going to depend upon some other person's opinion for a decision he should make himself. The other person may say to him, well, if I was you, but that's where the rub comes in. The other person is not you. And what might be perfectly normal and natural for them is merely another allergy for you. We cannot depend even upon expert counseling to take the place of personal decisions made with strength of character. Another very important factor in this type of problem is the essential psychic concept which we all have about ourselves. Each of us, one way or another, tries to answer the question, who am I? This is not an easy question to answer. For the most part, this thing that we call I is an ego, which is an accumulation of pressures. Buddha probably came nearer than anyone else to giving a proper estimation of the nature of I being a summary of the reflexes of the sensory perceptions brought together by the mental coordinator. Therefore, the I is not an infallible divine being inside of us. It's pretty obvious that it's not infallible, because if it was the one source of life in all of us, there could be no differences of opinion. If the power within us was absolute, we could never be in trouble. But it's not absolute, and it is not a preventative of trouble. In fact, it communicates trouble to most of its own parts in the course of years. But if it is a coordinator factor, if it is something that brings together a whole series of intensities and impulses, dramatized by the five sensory perceptions, then this thing I call myself is very largely merely a summation of my complex temperament. This I is not only a mental entity, but it is a highly conditioned entity. It is an entity which is always going to do what we want it to. It is always going to want to be what we decide it wants to be. And the person, when he says I, is not speaking from a point of great wisdom or infallibility. He is simply telling the story of his own nature and all the allergies that are locked in it. Very often the ego is simply defending an allergy, or defending a concept, or trying to prove the validity of an antagonism. Very often it takes years for an individual to prove just how bad his enemy is. I know cases in which it took three generations to make a real fiend out of an adversary. And all this time, the adversary didn't know anything about it. The individuals who hated were sick. The object of the hate could care less. Made no particular difference. They were sorry. They may never have found out why they were hated. But one generation after another fed an antagonism until it became a family heritage and affected children and their children to the third and fourth generation. Wherever we find these peculiar weeds growing in our garden, we can get rid of them as quickly as possible if we want to attain a better and more lasting peace of soul. Actually, allergies fall into a number of viewpoints at the moment. I think we may say safely that one of the greatest allergy mechanisms of the modern world is television. With that, we almost certainly can be sick in a comparatively short time. We take on all kinds of attitudes, and the worst part of it is that we are more likely, by nature, to believe that which is morbid, unhealthy, or unreasonable than to enjoy anything that is pleasant. A good, solidly established neurotic will turn off anything that looks as though it might have a happy ending. They just won't permit it. But if they can see suffering beyond all words, suffering that it took four authors and two publicity people to put together, then they know they're in the presence of sovereign truth. And they identify always with the most afflicted member of the cast. Now, this addiction is worse than the inevitable effort to get French pastry into every meal. French pastry at least looks well. And most of the programs do not even look well. And in recent years, the members of the cast have been miserably dressed. Nothing about it is really pleasant. But we are glued to it. We feel that it is absolutely necessary. And day by day, in every way, the whole world is being sickened by it. In this sense of the word, therefore, here is an object to which the whole world should be allergic, should use the greatest discrimination to try and find what is reasonable and what is true. And one of the reasons the whole world today is almost in an hysteria is because it is constantly being fed by exaggerations, misinterpretations, and corruptions of one kind or another. Now, next, perhaps, to this particular problem is the society in which we live. Actually, every human being is allergic to narcotics. Narcotic problems today are all out of hand. The individual perfectly willing to destroy his own future in order to have a moment of exhilaration or to feel wonderful for a couple of hours. This situation is becoming a world menace. All the publicity, all the efforts that are being made to cope with it have failed, because the individual is more concerned with a moment of superior attitude than he is in being alive in a few weeks later. This type of drug allergy has its equivalents also in psychological life. We are constantly endangering everything that is valuable in the effort to attain some kind of temporary result that pleases us. Out of this has come all kinds of activisms, all kinds of anarchy, everything that is possible to dramatize life and cause it to escape from the boundaries of common sense. One of the reasons we have so much violence in the world today is because most people have nothing constructive on their minds. They do not even want to think straight. They want to do what the drug addict does, have a high for a few minutes. So for a high, they have a riot or an outbreak of assassination, or they walk into somebody else's country. This is an emotional reaction. It is an self-expression from a person or groups of persons who have nothing in themselves worth expressing. and having no constructive attitude, follow the well-known advice or recommendation of the past, or what my grandmother always used to say, the devil finds something for idle hands to do. And the world is full of idle hands, and things are out of control. So the person who wants to get over his allergies must have something on his mind, some way of life that is more important than an allergic addiction. Philosophy can help him. It can give him a reason for life. It can make things important that are important. It can help him to be a straight person regardless of the environment in which he finds himself. The struggle against environment is very difficult, but it can be won. The individual, no matter what happens around him, is still capable of living his own life as he should live it. The Greeks were aware of this. They took every type of persecution rather than compromise their principles, and some of them went to martyrdom rather than to forbear from the things that they knew to be right. Socrates died for that. Christ was crucified for that. But actually, the individual is capable at all times of living a constructive life if he is going to be stronger than temptation. If temptation can move him in a very short time to something that is not right, then he is weak. Weakness opens him to everything. It opens him to bad advice which he doesn't understand. So we have people coming to us all the time with problems resulting from lack of understanding. Now we find a person who had lived 50 or 60 years in this world and comes for advice because they do not understand the simplest problems of daily existence. How they managed to get as old as they did without learning anything is something of a mystery. But it can be achieved if you make a career out of it. If you make certain that you do not learn, will not change, and continue to sit tight in the position that you are in now, you can gradually rock your way into a comparatively comfortable grave. But you are not going to have anything. And somewhere in the great plan of things, you're going to have to come back and do it again. And keep on doing it until you do it right. Nature says we're going to grow. Most of our troubles today are resistance to growth. They are an effort to perpetuate something that was not right in the first place, and most people are much rather die for their mistakes than live for their virtues. And until they do better, you just have trouble. Now, another type of allergy that we have to constantly work with is this mysterious problem of what we should believe. Actually, junk foods also exist in education. Most of our modern education is just about as near to junk food as we'll ever come. We can learn more and more about less and less than at any time in the history of the human race. Now, as a cure for everything, we're going to computerize life, and we're going to depend upon machines to do our thinking for us, although a computer expert reminded me only a few days ago that regardless of our optimism, it is beyond doubt true that no computer will ever be able to think. But if you don't think yourself, you get along all right with a machine that doesn't do any better. You can feed in one group of mistakes and get out another series of mistakes that are going to please you completely. They're going to prove largely that what you wanted to know is right because you fed the information in that way to make sure that it would. If this goes on, we will lose all reading, writing, and arithmetic out of the educational system. We will have individuals that will graduate without being able to spell their own names and will require a phonic computer to sign for them. This type of thing is just another example of an individual being over-indoctrinated with junk. Now, computers have their use, but that every child today should become a computer expert will keep his mind off of the realities of life, but will not protect him from any emergency that arises in his personal affairs. He can learn all the computerization that he wants to, but he will not have a good home unless he does a little thinking. He has to do his own living. So the computer is something to which we can become addicted, just as we are addicted to an unfortunate diet. The computer is a lazy solution to something. It is the individual continually trying to escape from the use of his own faculties. For a time, we kind of resented being forced to use our hands all the time, plowing and doing all this type of thing. We had to work hard. Then we went into a condition in which we had to use our minds in order to get by. They weren't very good, and we got into a lot of trouble with them, but we got tired of thinking. Now we want a machine that'll do it for us. And it will do it for us, all right, and we'll end up in a great deal of trouble. Nature has given us a job. It has given us a series of situations. It has placed us in a garden. And in this garden are weeds, valuable plants, beautiful flowers, and poison ivy. And it all depends on what we do with it and what use we make of these facilities, what we learn from experience. Any individual who has had a series of tragic experiences must have learned something, or else his life is very, very poor. He must have some gain to justify his existence in this world. Now, if you have things around you that you just can't stand, then the thing to do is now look into them and see what they are, and try to find out why you can't stand them. If they're really wrong, you shouldn't have tolerated them as long as you have. If there's a potential good in them, you should get at it immediately. If you can see a way in which a problem is a challenge, and that you have followed your own feelings for a long time and the problem is no better and perhaps worse, if this be the case, then the challenge is a solution. You must find out why. You must get an answer. Sometimes getting an answer requires a little humility. Sometimes we have to admit that we are wrong. We have to apologize for our own actions instead of demanding that somebody else apologizes. But whatever is necessary to put the thing in order must be done, because the final end of the whole problem, individually and collectively, is that we can live together in peace and common constructive relationship. While we are breaking up these patterns of security constantly, we are in trouble all the time. Another type of allergy that comes along in connection with our psychic integration is our belief and its relationship to life. You know, in the old days, people's beliefs were comparatively simple. Of course, in times when no one really lived outside of the little neighborhood in which he was born, or at least didn't wander very far and hurried home, beliefs were more or less orthodox, regular, and the believer was part of a community in which most people believed the same way. He went to the little church, and there he met his neighbors. There he had beliefs that were similar to theirs, and he lived in a community in which the overall believing determined respectability.